Welcome to the Ramble Room. Last night in Sheridan, the Republican faithful gathered for their annual Reagan Day dinner. The guest speaker, the keynote speaker, was Katrina Pearson. Now, Katrina is a well-known social media influencer, a public speaker, a political analyst, an author, an inventor, and a broadcast media contributor. She's done just about everything. She has appeared regularly on the Fox News Channel, CNN, MSNBC, Newsmax, and all across major news networks. She's been quoted in every national newspaper, along with several international outlets. Incidentally, last night, there was a newspaper there from Japan. She campaigned for Congress in the 32nd District of Texas, becoming Governor Palin's first endorsement for the 2014 election cycle. After that, she became associated with Donald Trump. In 2020, Katrina oversaw the multi-million-dollar National Coalition Program for President Donald J. Trump's reelection campaign, which led to the most historic support of minorities for a Republican presidential candidate since the 1960s. Katrina spoke for about an hour, and I'm going to play it just as it was recorded last night. I think it's an interesting talk, and I think you'll find her background quite interesting. Beyond that, I want you to pay attention to the mood in the room. Now, this was a packed house. I wouldn't venture to guess how many people were there, but pay attention to the reaction of the crowd. I hope you enjoy Katrina Pearson.
Folks, it is my honor to introduce Katrina Pearson, our speaker for the night. Give her a warm Wyoming Republican hand.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Well, now that you've heard my entire bio, I guess I don't need to add to that. So, good evening. I am so thrilled to be here with you all this evening. I mean, honestly, any chance to be away from Washington, D.C. is a saving grace. And it's so funny because I always try to put together some thoughts when I speak to the organizers, and then I write these speeches and I never stick to them. So I have no idea what I'm really going to discuss with you because I've met so many of you tonight. I've met so many of your kids who are here. God bless them. And it's just, it's very heartwarming to see so many people who are still engaged and want to fight for our country. So I'd like to thank the Sheridan County GOP, the executive committee. Brian, you have a great team. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, your team is truly phenomenal. I've been to a lot of these events, and you guys have been absolutely wonderful. And all of the elected officials have been acknowledged, so I won't repeat all of that. But I just want to say, you know, there are so many other places you could be this evening. And the fact that you're here really speaks volumes. And so I'm just honored that you all have me tonight. I will acknowledge that you have a congresswoman. And just out of curiosity, after speaking with many of you, is she representing you very well?
No.
Okay, I just thought I would check. So the temperature that I have taken in this room is correct, but now she has primary challengers. Yeah. Robin Belinsky, Denton App, I met you earlier, and our very own Trump-endorsed candidate, Harriet Hagman. You know, my entire political career, I guess what, 12, 14 years now, has been holding elected officials accountable. And if there's one thing that you learn tonight is that you have one job, and that is to hold your elected officials accountable. And, you know, it's a shame that your current congresswoman isn't with us this evening. I mean, you know, I was really looking forward to meeting her before I sat down in front of the January 6th Unselect Committee. but I guess they'll just have to wait. But speaking of this committee nonsense, you know, I was handed a newspaper this morning from some Sheridan press. And I thought, you know, should I address that tonight? And then they told me the Sheridan press was going to be here. So I said, I'm absolutely going to address that tonight. Now, I don't know who runs this paper. I don't know who the editor is. But if you do, I would highly suggest that you ask them to revisit the Wyoming statutes for libel. That would be Title I, Code of Civil Procedure, Chapter 29, that specifically addresses the trash that I read about myself today. So, to print that someone has been indicted is liable. Period. And let me just tell you from experience, because as a Trump person, we deal with this on a daily basis. The court doesn't care if you know the definition of liable, you're still held accountable. And I know it's kind of a small town, respectively, so I highly doubt that the author or the editor has the legal team that could defend something like that. So I'll decide how I'm going to deal with that later. You don't get to this level of politics and media without knowing how to defend yourself vigorously from fake news media. So having addressed that, tonight is about you. And, you know, I say that I'm here because, you know, I'm just excited to be here. But I know that we really tried hard to get you a Trump family member and the schedule didn't work out. And you got stuck with me. And I say stuck because I've been a Trump family surrogate since 2015. And I just have such a great honor to go out and represent the greatest president of our lifetime. Yeah. And his family. Because they have been through something that no other family could have withstood. And I was had a front row seat to it all. So it is my honor to be here as a proud Trump supporter. And you know, a lot of people don't know too much about me prior to Trump, and I'm just a little bit different than most people in Trump world because they were all fairly new to the political scene. However, I was not. I came up through the grassroots in the state of Texas. And I like to make it my mission to talk to groups because everywhere I go, I get the same questions over and over again because Trump's orbit is so small, people just really don't ever know what's going on or what Trump is like. And so I like to talk about Trump. Is that okay? Yeah. So I thought I'd share a few stories with you and talk about this journey that we've been on the last few years and then give you a little bit of history about me so you know where I'm coming from and why I fight the way I fight, because I fight like a girl. And if you know anything about Republican politics, nobody fights like us girls. And it's just kind of fun to see this journey, and it's scary, and it's sad, and it's exciting, and we just never know what's going to happen next. You know, you go from, you know, being this, you know, Tea Party organizer to a Russian spy, like that. And so it's been an emotional roller coaster, but I wouldn't have changed a day. So tonight, I'd like to have a very serious discussion about climate change. I bet you're thinking, wait, did she just say climate change? What event are we at? But yes, but I'm not talking about the climate change that the radical, loony left people obsess over, not the cult. I'm talking about climate change in the party. We need to have a serious discussion about this. Because we're only going to grow if we work together and understand where we're making mistakes and where we can do better. Because the left is coming for us. They are coming for us, for all of us. Just because a couple of people get canceled here and there, don't worry, they're coming for you. So we have to get serious. So I'll give you a little background. I am from the People's Republic of Texas. I am one of the original founders of the Tea Party movement. Any Tea Party people in here? Okay, we're still around. I'm a proud Black Republican. But don't say anything, because I'm not supposed to exist. And I am unapologetically proud to be an American, and I love my flag. As Dr. Bird mentioned, I have served my community, I have served my state, and I have now served my country. And I would do it all over again, even knowing what I know now. Yes, I have been acknowledged by the Texas legislature for my volunteer efforts. I spent 7 years volunteering in my community, doing the same things that many of you have been doing before I went national. And the greatest honor of my life was to serve Donald Trump. And I say that because I have helped, I mean, countless numbers of politicians in my career, but only one ever called me to say thank you. And that is a testament to who he is as a man. And I've served him since 2015, long before the infamous escalator ride. And I will never forget it. And a little known secret that we've kept really quiet, which shouldn't be, is that Donald Trump was speaking at Tea Party rallies 5 years before he ran for office. So he knew what the people wanted. He knew why everyone was so happy, because he saw the same things that I saw traveling all over the country, and that everyone was saying the exact same thing, even though they had never met each other. And that was the first awakening. And now I think we're having another awakening. So as one of the originals of the Trump orbit, way back on the fifth floor of Trump Tower, when he was just this iconic celebrity businessman, there was a handful of us who helped him. There was like less than 10 of us, and we won the Republican presidential primary. To this day, I will never know how that happened. I mean, when you have people who are just doing what they're doing and just doing it as our lives depended on it, perhaps they probably did. But we got the job done, and so that now makes me Donald Trump's longest serving political spokesperson. And I carry that with a badge of honor. I have all the negative headlines to prove it. And I gotta say, I cannot wait to sit in front of that select committee, because I am going to be the one who exonerates Donald J. Trump from any of those ridiculous shenanigans. So I'm looking forward to it. So as I started out as a grassroots activist, things progressed, and that started in 2009 with the rise of the Tea Party movement. I gave a speech at Dallas City Hall that went viral. I had no idea. I went from 3 Facebook in my inbox messages to 3,000. And that was my first experience with going viral. At least that was my positive experience for going viral. I did run for Congress in 2014. And when I met Trump in early 2015, at this time, I was helping my senator, Ted Cruz, when he was running for president. Helped get him elected to the Senate as well. So naturally, I was supporting my guy. So I walked up to Donald Trump. And I said, "Mr. Trump, I heard a rumor that you're thinking about running for president again. because, you know, that rumor's been out there since 1982. And he leaned back and he took a deep breath and he said, well, you know, I'm thinking about it. I haven't decided, but I'm thinking about it. And so I leaned in, he's like this tall, and I leaned in and I said, Mr. Trump, you have to run. And he tells the story all the time when I'm in the room. And he says, you think so? I said, oh no, I know so. I said, I've been all over this country for the last few years. You're the only one that can win. And he said, really? And I said, yes. Republicans don't have the guts to take on Jeb Bush. Republicans don't have the guts to take on Hillary Clinton like she needed to be taken on. And Republicans cower in the back of the room when anyone criticizes them in the press. You are the only one that can win. And he says, interesting. And I said, I know I'm a Cruz girl. But if you run, you're going to win, and you're going to win big, because I'm going to help you. And so, you know, I don't know if that was the moment I realized my life was going to change, or if it was after a great phone call. So before I get there, I will tell you all some of the most asked questions that I get about Trump. Number one, yes, he does eat McDonald's a lot. Number two, yes, he always has a Diet Coke on his desk. Third, yes, he does prefer his steaks very, very, very well done. And behind closed doors, yes, he is very kind and generous and caring. It's unfortunate that he would never let us show that during the campaign. But one day, I was sitting in Atlanta at a heritage event. And I was doing a lot of CNN at the time, and I received a call from a producer, and they said, we hear Donald Trump is making, you know, waves, and he's going to file paperwork. Can you come on and do an interview? And I said, hey, guys, I can't. I'm in a ballroom. I can't leave this event. And they said, okay, well, can you do a phoner? It's when you call in. I said, sure. So I stepped out, went up to my room, called into CNN, didn't know what was going on, so I'm hearing it as they're talking. So, well, Donald Trump's going to file his paperwork. And I said, that's it. Donald J. Trump is the next president of the United States. And they were like, what? And they laughed and said, oh, you know, this is going to be a clown show. It's a publicity stunt. You heard it all. And by the time I made it back downstairs, my phone rang. And there was a woman, and she said, can you hold for Mr. Trump? Well, yeah, of course I can hold for Mr. Trump. So he gets on the phone, and he says, Katrina, I just saw you on CNN. You are amazing. I'm sitting here like, this is really happening. And he says, my own people can't defend me the way you do. He goes, I'm never going to forget this. I'm very thankful. Thank you so much for what you're doing. You need to come see me sometime in New York. And I was like, okay. And then he talked to me for like 10 minutes. He was on his way to Turnberry. He was talking about all the criticism, and he was going through all the media outlets, and I just sat there and listened because I was in shock. So I go back into this room. I sat at my table, and I said, guys, Donald Trump just called me. And they go, really? Why? And I said, to say thank you. And I was just shocked. So I knew then the kind of man that he was. And the calls became more and more frequent every time I would go on TV to defend him. And then I'd run into him again a couple of times at Steve King's event in Iowa, at another event in South Carolina, and then again in New Hampshire. And then one day I got the call. And he says, are you wedded to Texas? I'm absolutely wedded to Texas, right? So I said, well, yeah, but what do you need? And I was thinking he just wanted me to do my grassroots thing, you know, SDC states maybe. And he goes, no, I want you to represent my entire campaign. He goes, no one defends me the way you do. You're the best, and I have to have the best. So what do you do when Donald Trump asks you to work for him? You say yes. And I'm very blunt, like him. I speak my mind, like he does, and I tell the truth, which sometimes hurts people's feelings. And no other Republican would have given me that opportunity ever. But he gave me the opportunity to be the first Black woman to lead a Republican winning presidential campaign. Media doesn't want to talk about that, though. So he looked at the campaign manager and said, yeah, let her stay in Texas, give her what she needs. So we put a studio in my home, Dallas County, and I went on TV all day, every day. Weekends, nights, it didn't matter. I took every single interview, never turned one down. TV, radio, Al Jazeera, RT, I was on. In the UK, I did every single reporter, did over 1,000 interviews for him in 2016. Right there from Dallas, Texas. So every time you saw me, the 5-on-1 panels on CNN, I was okay, because I would just go out and sit by my pool. Who's next? That was my attitude back then. And I was kind of nervous because when I thought they were going to ask me to move to New York to do this, I was like, ooh, I really didn't want to go and be surrounded by concrete and have to deal with stinky cabs and mean people. You know, nothing against New Yorkers, it's just not my thing. I'm a Texan. We wave to people as we walk by. We don't have to know them. And by the end, it turned out I ended up living surrounded by concrete in Washington, D.C., getting in stinky cabs or Ubers, waking up to jackhammers and sirens. But you know what? It was the greatest time I had ever spent in my life, because that town was on red alert. They were running scared. And the morning after the election, in November 2016, the world went mad and has not recovered. And after that, I was asked to serve as senior advisor to the presidential transition team. And this is where we, at first it was at Trump Tower, and they set us up at the GSA building, the epitome of government. And I mean, I had a blast. It was so funny, you guys. I am not kidding. These people in Washington, D.C. had no idea to handle us. They had no idea. They did not know how to speak to us, how to approach us, what to even say to us. And we just laughed. I mean, I could tell you stories you would not believe, but it would make sense on why our country's been run into the ground. And they would tell him things like, well, you can't really do this, or you shouldn't do that, or we can't do that because. And we're like, we didn't come here to be told what to do. And the president would say, well, go figure it out. I don't want to hear how we can't do it, why we can't do it. We're doing it. Go figure it out. And they would go into these little rooms and whisper to each other. It's like, I can't believe they hired this person. They don't have 25 years of government experience. This person didn't graduate from Harvard. That one didn't graduate from Yale. You know, the elitist talk. They had normal people coming in to take care of the people's business, right? And so one day I caught these guys speaking in the hallway, and I said, I just want to let you guys know something. It's all you Ivy Leaguers who have run our country into the ground, and that's why we're here today. So as you could tell, there was somewhat of a division in D.C., just a little. But troublemakers like us, we just don't care about that stuff. We knew what needed to be done, and we were going to do it, come hell or high water. That's what we say in Texas. And so he wanted to run the administration like a business, and he did, because he's a thinker, and he's a doer, and he wants to get things done, and he'd made a lot of promises, a lot of promises that he had intended on keeping, which is truly unheard of in Washington. And I think what he's done is he's really shocked the system in more ways than I think we can imagine at this point. Because there was this typical go along to get along, don't rock the boat. You know, the consultant class had a conniption. And that's when the Never Trump stuff started. Because you know why? Because these guys weren't going to get that inflow of cash to keep their vacation homes. That's how that started. That's how corrupt it is. They weren't going to get to take those extra 2 to 3 vacations around the world because the fountain of cash had been turned off. That's why they hated him. And that's why they worked so hard against him. And by the way, the term expert in Washington, D.C. is used very loosely. And I mean very, very loosely. But you know, it was a learning experience, and I like to tell, especially some of the younger people, about these types of things, because we have in our minds what to expect. Like, we're gonna win, or we're gonna go, or we're gonna do this. I thought I was actually gonna get to take a break. Oh no, it just got worse, and worse, and worse. But that means we were doing something right. So, after transition, I was asked to be his deputy press secretary in the White House. And as badly as I wanted to do it, I got a call from Brad Parscale the night before the announcement, and he says, I know you want to go in, and you've earned it, but, ugh, the dreaded but. He says, if you go in, then that leaves nobody else on the outside to defend him. And I just felt this gut punch. And I said, you know what? I didn't even think about that. You're right. Because Kellyanne was going in, and Sarah was, everybody was going in. And he goes, why don't you just stay out here with me and build his super PAC so we can fight for him on the outside? And I said, you know what? I think you're right. So that evening, I called Jared Kushner. I said, Jared, I think I'm going to have to take a pass and help build the president's mechanism on the outside. Maybe I'll come in year 2, year 3, you know. And he says, okay, if that's what you want. The next day, first wave announcement comes out with Sarah Huckabee Sanders as the deputy press secretary. Amazing, right? So from there, Trump had to take on the left, the right, the in-between, the globalists, the never-Trumpers, every foreign entity you can think of, all of the press. And it was just a daily onslaught of hate and vitriol. And I just don't know how he withstood it. And he would get up every day and work, getting the people's business done. And I just admire him for that. But what he also did, and why we're in the situation we're in now, is he caused a lot of problems because he exposed a lot of things. Things that the average person isn't supposed to know. The swamp really is a swamp. He lifted the veil so the public could see inside. He showed them the deep state is real. He showed them all of the secrets that weren't supposed to be known to the public. How corrupt Washington, D.C. is. How corrupt Hollywood is. How corrupt the media is. Our entire society is being driven by corruption. And that is why they took extraordinary measures to make sure that he did not get back into the White House. And he should be there right now. And now we, you and me, have to be very, very careful because cancel culture is real. And anyone who falls out of line with the approved thinking, you are in trouble. They put you in this category to where you could even lose your job just for saying what you think or what you believe, things that used to be okay in America. They've weaponized everything. It's not just government agencies anymore. Corporations are now weaponized. You can't even turn on Netflix or Hulu or anything without seeing some sort of progressive political message. It's sickening. You can't watch a football game anymore without being you know, having horrible things driven into your children's minds. Government has overreached so far, politics has gone so deep into the tentacles of our society, that the only way to uproot it is for the American people to remind them who really have the power in this country. So I get a lot of hopelessness, and I get a lot of people who feel like there's nothing we can do because the battle is great. It really is. No one can fight the federal government. No one can fight corporate America. But that is a myth. Because while we're trying to keep our children from being indoctrinated, we have been indoctrinated. The American people have always had the power to stop this. Ronald Reagan would say that our freedom is one generation away from extinction. My message to you is that our freedom is one election away from extinction. And it's our responsibility, and we hold all the power. And when I do travel this country, they say, why can't we just get ahead? Why can't we move the ball forward? What is wrong? My answer to those people are always, you gotta get off the sidelines. For so long, we have abdicated our own authority to elected officials. We've abdicated our authority to our governments. We go and we yell and we scream at our politicians when they don't do what we want them to do, and then we reelect them. So when people tell me they're mad at the government, or they're mad at Democrats, or they're mad at Republicans, I say, you need to look in the mirror. Because you're not doing what you're supposed to do if that's the case. And I know it's scary, and I know it can be, you know, really horrific to have your name in headlines. But today, if your name is not in the headlines, you're not doing it right. So to keep voting for the same people over and over again, expecting a different result, is the definition of?
Insanity.
Exactly. So what are we doing? It drives me crazy. And it really hit home because we were almost there with Tea Party. Getting back to local elections, getting back to accountability, getting back to having people who stand up and fight for us. And then President Trump came in. What did we do? We abdicated our authority to Trump. He can do it for us. Isn't that what we did? If we want to solve the problem, we have to be accountable. We did that. So now we have an opportunity to do it the way it should have been done back then. Because I will tell you that America is America in name only. We have people who are in prison right now who have not been charged and who have been there for months. There is a young boy who was put in jail and was denied bail specifically because the judge said, because he was homeschooled and did not want to put him back in the hands of his parents. So yes, we have lost our country. I say that to tell you that we have a small window of opportunity to get it back. And that's why I'm excited. And that's why I'm here. Because they want you to be disheartened. They want you to give up. And they want you to feel like you can't do anything anymore because it's so big and it's so vast. But here's the good news. You don't have to fight the federal government. You have to fight to save your state. Because your state is your line of defense against an abusive federal government. Yeah. So we've got to put our feet down. And I'm going to tell you, and I know everyone is distracted, and this is by design, by critical race theory. I hate to break it to you guys, but this has been going on for over 60 years. You're just now finding out about it. It's a distraction. We get caught up in our trigger issues, and we don't realize that right now, everybody should come together with one issue. If you come together on this one issue and you fight together as a group, as a people, the way our founders did, we will win. And that issue is liberty. Period. If you're elected officials, I don't care if it's city council. I don't care if you vacation with your state. I hear this all the time. Oh, my state rep and I, we vacation together. Our kids go to the same schools. We do this, that, and the other. And I say, okay, is he defending your liberty? If that answer in your heart is no, then he should no longer be your state rep. Yes. He can still be your friend, still go on vacation. Your kids don't have to change schools. He just can't represent you. And if we do that, we could change this country in one election cycle. And it became very apparent to me after Election Day when I saw this country come together for President Trump, because they knew something bad had happened. They knew it. I'm from Texas. We got millions and millions and millions of voters in Texas. Florida, California. Tell me how the most populated states in this country can get their votes counted, turned in, and have a winner on election night, but five counties in smaller states can't? You would have to suspend logic and reason to believe any of that nonsense. So people knew what had happened. And I felt partially responsible for not being able to communicate at that time what we should have been doing, because this was all happening in real time for me, being somebody right there on the inside. And I say all that to say, we have the power, because Nevada, Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, all of those states have recall legislation on the books. Do you know that within 30 to 60 days, every last one of those state legislatures could have been recalled with only 25% of the electorate? Isn't that heartbreaking? The people didn't know the power they had. We have had such an amazing foundation to our country and our states. Did you know that you have somewhat of a measure of recall on your books? Because I looked it up. What you should do now is take what you have and broaden it, so that when people like Congresswoman Cheney serves her own interests and not yours, you can recall her. That is how we save America. We make sure that we have the necessary tools and resources in our state statutes so the people have recourse. Because the recourse that those states have, they didn't even know it. They didn't even know it. Those state legislatures that wanted to vote the right way but were pressured not to should have been yanked right out of those seats right then and right there. That's how you fight. That's how we fight as a people. And that is how our founders built this country, so that you have the power. So no more of this hopelessness. No more of the fight is too big. All you have to do is secure your state. Because I'm going to go secure my state. And I know a lot of other people who are going to go secure their states. And when the time comes, we're all going to come together as republics in this union and fight them. And when that happens, we will win. And so there are some young people in the room that I had the pleasure to spend some time with. So I'm going to take a break off you adults. And I included some of the things that I use for some of the younger people, because it's truly on them as well. And a lot of people say, oh, our kids, they don't get it, they're not fighters. I got news for you. My son will be 25 on Christmas morning. His generation gets it. He's further right than I am. he was telling me in November, Mom, you're not fighting hard enough. And I'm like, I'm on the line here. But they get it. It's because they're independent thinkers, and they don't buy into the nonsense that some of the millennials have. Right? And I don't know how that happened. Maybe it's the digital age where there's just this freedom of information that's out there. But if you put good values in them, they're going to be just fine. And so I love it when I see the generation behind his at meetings like this, because they are the ones that are really going to carry us into the future. I have such high hopes, and I know it looks bad now, and you might think I'm crazy, but I'm telling you, I'm in the thick of this, in the weeds, and on the front lines. This is a fight that we were all born for this moment to be in, for our children, so that they can restore the republic. And so I have these life hacks that I tell the young folks, and those of you who are active in politics and are going to move on, they'll be great for you too. So I'm a firm believer if you can learn from somebody else's mistakes, you probably should. And it would save you a lot of negative headlines along the way. And so the first life hack is to know thyself. It is the best advice you could ever give a young person, because they are being deeply conditioned by everything in society. But if you get to know yourself and love who you are, then you're going to be stronger than 90% of the people around you. You have to know what you want and what you love. And when I say know yourself, you have to be yourself authentically. Not the person that your parents want you to be, not the person that society expects you to be, but who you are inside. Because God has given us all a gift. And if you can access that, you'll be unstoppable. Life hack number two. Accountability, that is key for everything. Failure to properly implement life hack number one is your sole responsibility. You have to be accountable for everything you encounter in your life. It could be a betrayal, it could be a fight, it could be a perceived failure, but you have to be accountable to that, because there are things you just don't know yet. So don't beat yourself up about it. Learn from it, grow from it, integrate it, and then leave it in the past. Always, always, always move forward. Life hack number three, you cannot change people. But if you change, people will change. Think about that for a second. You can never lower your standards, because you actually teach people how to treat you. So don't expect other people to change until you change. Now, life hack number four, the internet is forever, and I think that speaks for itself. Life hack number five, don't ever, ever, ever read the comment section. For the preservation of your sanity, do not read the comment section, no matter how bad you want to. And even if it's good, don't read them. Because honestly, what other people have to say doesn't matter. And if they have a problem with you, it's actually their problem, not yours. Back to life hack number one, right? Don't lower those standards. Life hack number six, this is very, very important. Politicians are just people. And people will let you down. Life is short. So please, please, please don't waste your energy and time fighting for someone who's not fighting for themselves and who's not going to fight for you. That is something I see happen a lot with young people. And then they get disenchanted and they get their hearts crushed and they exit the field. So you have to protect yourselves. Because what I know is you cannot win it for them. You just can't. I've tried. Life hack number seven, don't watch the news. Unless you have to be on it. Because you got to know what they're talking about before you go open your mouth. You have to protect your mental faculty. I have not watched the news in 11 months. And I feel great. The weight has lifted. Because the political environment now is just so weaponized. And a lot of it doesn't make sense. We have hostile corporate media. Fake news all over the place, censorship and division. I mean, the narratives are just made up now. You can't even make up some of the narratives that they make up now. So the moral of that story is that you can choose to not participate in the chaos or contribute to it. That's a personal decision you have to make. So see life hack number one. Ready for number eight? Life hack number eight, the echo chamber grows personalities, not movements. We are so confident in our case because we're right. We have the truth on our side. We're morally right. But if you wonder why we can't seem to get ahead, it's because we stay in the echo chamber. We go to our typical meetings with our same people, say the same things, yet the world is still spinning and everything's going on outside of the echo chamber. The people that we want to get the most, we want them to just get it. The ones who need to hear it the most can't even hear us because they're just human beings, and maybe, but let's just assume that generally we're all the same. That means everyone has their own distinct personality, their own distinct conditioning, and their own personal life experiences, and they've been on their own journey their entire life. So all of their thoughts go through the same filtration process as everybody else. This is my medical training coming out. So when you're dealing with people, you have to know you're dealing with a psychology. People who may not think like you or have experienced the things that you have. So sometimes just stating your philosophical position goes nowhere, and we've seen this happen over and over again. So I can get up here, and we can go to our events, and we can throw red meat and get all the cheers, and we can go home, and nothing changes. Nothing. We could get media likes and follows and, you know, grow our own social media influence in our own echo chamber. And it goes nowhere. So we have to get beyond the echo chamber as a party, as a people, even in our communities, and go into communities and build relationships with people, which is the infrastructure that I built for President Trump in 2020. We opened the first brick and mortar offices in minority communities. And we spent $10 million. And that is why you saw a historical turnout of minorities for a Republican candidate since the 1960s. And they were in tears, physical tears, when they thought we were going to leave. So there was a lot of pressure put on the RNC to reopen those offices, and they are. They are. Surprisingly, there was a lot of support. So I would go to these Republican RNC committee meetings for donors and, you know, the high-dollar donors, and ask to speak and give presentations. And, you know, I'd sit in this room and I ask the question, why do 98% of Black Americans vote Democrat? And they just look at me because everybody's afraid to answer the question. And I said, let me help you out. It's not because they're brainwashed. It's not because they're stuck on a plantation. It's simply because a Republican has never gone into the community, introduced themselves, tell them what they stand for, and ask for their vote. That's why. How could we ever expect any community to vote for us if we don't have the decency to ask for it? And in that moment, they were like, how do we donate to what you're doing, specifically? And it was an eye-opening moment, because people don't really think of it that way. You know, Black people used to vote Republican, and people forget about that. And it was heartbreaking for me as a Black Republican to encounter candidates who had no interest in even introducing themselves to the community. Not President Trump. President Trump said, what do you have to lose? Vote for me. Democrats have failed you for 40 years. What do you have to lose? And he doubled the Black vote in 2016 for Republicans. It's incredible. And so we have an opportunity now to continue that momentum. Since the groundwork has been laid, I think a lot of them are expecting it. So we just need to show up, say this is who we are, and we'd like your vote. And I guarantee you, you're going to start to get it. And you stay in those communities and develop those relationships, and before you know it, it'll be like it was in the beginning. Everybody's going to come together and vote for the person that is best suited to represent them and not the party. So I'm excited about the future, as scary as it might be, but you know, life hack number 9 is up. And this is also interesting. So people don't want the truth. We think we're right and we're on this roll because we know the truth. We have the truth. You know, media lies, Democrats are lying, but we know the truth. All we have to do is tell people the truth and then they'll get it. Newsflash, you're dealing with psychology. Nobody wants the truth. People want to be right. They don't want the truth. And that is the power of the algorithm. The algorithms are confirmation bias. It's instant, constant feedback, 24/7, all day long. And that is why we have these different realities that pop up in the country, because it's constant confirmation bias. You're right, you're right, you're right. These people are bad, those people are bad, and everybody is just stuck in this algorithm. So you have to find ways to get out of that, because perception is reality. And they force feed it to us daily. That's why I take cell phone breaks also. But that's how they got people to believe in the Russia hoax for 3 years. They got people to believe it. And it wasn't even a thing. It was amazing to me to watch unfold. And then it happened again with this Q thing that went around. I'm like, really? How could you support President Trump and you don't want people to do anything? You want them to just sit back and wait, and then somebody else is going to come along and save the day. It made no sense to me. But that's how powerful those algorithms are. So you have to mind your faculty. And so if you learn to validate your opponent before destroying them, then you can get them to hear your truth. Because that's what happened. And I said this to the young people in the room. If somebody says to me, you're just a Russian spy, and they do it all the time, and my response, like I said, response, I don't react, I just say, you know what, you're right. And then they pause, because now what are they going to say? It's the same way you disarm a narcissist. And as they sit there, I just say, and you know what, the entire federal government, $30 million, special investigations means I must be one heck of a good spy. Because here I am. You know, it just doesn't make sense. But then at that point, you can see in their face, they get it. Because now they feel stupid. Because obviously, if she was a Russian spy and did all these bad things, she'd be in jail. And then once they feel stupid, I don't know. You got them. And that's how you dismantle those things. Life hack number 10, last one, is you are not alone. Just one person standing in the body of Christ is more powerful than millions combined. And we've all had our own life story with personal experiences. And many of you, I'm sure, have had very interesting journeys. And it always reminds me of what my forensic psychology professor told me my junior year in college. And she would say, because we were studying serial killers, and she would say, all it takes is one positive adult influence to change the course of a child's life. Just one. That person for me was my grandmother. And so I make sure that I'm that person with every young person that I meet. And at one point, I was introduced to a 15-year-old teenage girl along my journey who profoundly altered my very existence. And my soul actually shifted in a way that I cannot even describe with words when I encountered this woman. And I'll share this story with you as I close. This 15-year-old girl is actually the reason why I became the fighter I am today. I fight for liberty and I fight for justice. And You know, I will fight to the end, and I've proven that. And people always wonder, like, how do you do that? I mean, they attack you and all these things. It doesn't bother me because I've stepped into my purpose. And I couldn't have done that had I not knew who I was, knew what I believed, and wanted to fight for it. And so I believe that every choice that we encounter in our lives, good or bad, really creates the circumstances that shape our lives, that builds our character. And if you continue to move forward, it moves you through the world in mysterious ways, and it truly does program who you are. So I always tell young people to embrace your past and accept it all and move forward. And so this is a story about how God's plan can unfold in your life under incredible circumstances. And, you know, a non-believer would say, oh, it's just all a coincidence. You know, even a mystic would say, oh, that's just synchronistic. But it's still all in the most loving way. And so it is she who keeps me grounded and driven to succeed, and why I never pass up an opportunity to mentor other young women. And you can ask anyone who works with me. You know, I'm usually the mom in the office, like the resident psychologist. The staff literally put a couch in my office. And it was always full of people, and I just love it. And I treat my staff like my family, because a lot of these kids are like 20s when they come in to work on these campaigns. And so they'd come and sit on my couch and talk about their lives. It could be about boyfriends or parents, and, you know, everybody's just trying to measure up, you know? And so I just love to take the opportunities to impart my wisdom of my traumatic childhood and help them navigate their lives. And they still call me today. This is what's going on. What do you think? And I just really love that, because there's a lot of bad influences out there. And so I love it when they call me when they have problems. And so I digress. Back to the story. This teenager was a little Caucasian girl. She had reddish brown hair, blue eyes, and she was freckled all over. And she was pregnant by a 17-year-old black man. So she was her father's firstborn and only daughter. And this was, you know, back in the mid-70s in Texas. So as you can imagine, it was an interesting time. And her parents actually owned a little grocery store in town next to the cotton gin on the countryside. And when her father found out she was pregnant, he was devastated. But he looked this little girl in the eye and told her that abortion was not an option. And so back then, they would send their unwed daughters off to give birth to their children and give them up for adoption, which is what he did. And Texas at the time didn't have a method to adopt biracial babies. And so her father sent her with her maternal grandmother, and she was placed in a home for unwed mothers. And so, you know, today most parents would drive their child to Planned Parenthood, not this one. But when it came time for her to give birth, the nurses made a mistake. And they didn't realize that she was giving the baby up for adoption, and they took the baby into her room for a feeding. So this little girl, 15 is little to me, so this little girl held this 6-pound baby and brushed her hair, fed her, and looked at all the little toes and fingers just in awe. But the nurses figured out, oh my gosh, this baby is being given up for adoption. We have to go remove the child from the room. So they rushed in to take the baby out of the room. At the exact same time, her parents were going in to see her, and they got to see the little baby too, their firstborn grandchild. So to make this long story short, about 6 weeks passed, and she called home and told her father that she wanted to keep her baby. And her father said, okay, we're going to come get you. And they drove 6 hours to pick up his daughter and his brand new granddaughter and drove them back home. And here I am. Yes, I am a native Texan. I was just born in Kansas. But I am unapologetically pro-life because I have one. I don't need a Bible verse. I don't need a philosophy to stand for life. I stand for life simply because I have one. Had that been today, I may not be here. But I will be the first to admit that being born to a teenage mother was not fun. Babies, trying to take care of babies does not work. It is just not a good mixture. Growing up was rough, and it was tough. And looking back, I don't know how I survived. But that was my journey. And no one has the right to tell me that my journey was not worth it. And I lash out at people when they say, oh, this young woman, you're going to ruin your life. You can't have a kid. You can't take care of yourself. And I tell those people, stop being so selfish. That's a selfish thing to say. You're so concerned with what this child may or may not end up in that you want to make yourself feel better about the decision that somebody else is about to make. And that, to me, is morally wrong. Because we all have a right to be here. God has given us this gift of life, and it is our job to protect it. So yes, it was rough, and it was tough. I have the battle wounds to prove it. But I also had the opportunity to do everything that I just said, followed my own advice. I ended up having a child myself at 20. But I still worked, and I put myself in school. I did not go on welfare. I sat in my car studying for my exams under my dome light because I couldn't pay to have my electricity on in my apartment. That's just what you do. You just get it done. You do what has to be done. And I know now that that journey, even though perceived by some would be bad, is why I am who I am today. So I don't regret any of it. I wouldn't have changed a thing. That's why I fight. I've had to fight for everything my entire life. Some call me a scrapper. But you can't get that way without all of those hurdles and trials and tribulations along the way. And it really gets to me, you know, in Texas, we just passed the heartbeat bill. I sit on the board of Human Coalition, an entity that has strategically been on the front lines of the pro-life movement, saving babies all over this country. And they help moms do it. And it's truly a blessing now to be somebody that's actively involved in saving children across this country. Because life is a right, and it's not given by government. So government cannot take it away. And it's our job to make sure. Because it's an opportunity to expand the kingdom of God. And I say that even for the bad ones. You know, because sometimes people come here to create chaos, but that chaos creates the people who can then come and restore it. And if not for that one decision, life, I would have never have been able to reach a level that only a fraction of people ever born will reach. And only in America could that happen, to go from the projects to the White House. Is we are all on our own journey, and we were born for this moment in time. You don't have to take my word for it. Just look around. Look around. All of these people think and feel the same way about the country that we do. The question is, what are you going to do about it? I'd say you're going to take action. We can't wait on God. God's not going to do our job for us. We just have to have faith in God that He's going to carry us when we're doing our job. Because in my experience, that's how it works. If you accept the call, He will protect you. If you do what you're doing out of the call and not the desire, the protection is there. And I will say that Thomas Jefferson has always said, it's one of my favorite quotes, is that resistance to tyranny is obedience to God. So you have one job. And to all of you who have been supporting this movement and the mission and taking up the challenges at your state, local, and federal level, I commend you. Because it is not the easiest thing to do today, but it is the only thing that we should be doing today if we're going to save our country. So I'm personally thanking you all in advance, because now I know you're all going to go get to work. And I'm going to come back, and I'm going to check in on all of you so I can report to the president. So thank you so much for having me here, and it's just been my honor and such a pleasure. And I don't know if we have time for questions. We have time for questions, or are we moving on?
Just a couple questions.
Sure. Okay, a couple questions. That's really a no, but because I asked, you get a couple questions. Are there any questions? I answered everybody's questions tonight. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so you're from Texas.
Yes.
Yes. Give us your take. And what we need to do up here in Wyoming, because I think some of them are getting up here.
Oh, I'm sure they are, and the federal government's probably busing them here. What you need to do is to make sure you have a governor that's going to fight it. Look, without a governor that's going to fight for you, it's over. It is over. We have a governor that's not fighting for us in Texas. Governor Greg Abbott has been an utter failure. Absolutely. We have been fighting this issue on the border since I've been involved in politics. You know, and it makes me angry when they say, oh, we're fighting Biden's border problem. Guys, people have been coming across the Texas border as long as I've been alive. This is nothing new. It's just worse. And when President Trump was president, he asked Governor Abbott to declare an emergency on the border. Remember, he shut the government down over it. Abbott didn't do it. He didn't do it. He didn't even go to the meeting on the border with the president when he met with the border patrol there.
So it's all talk,
it's all talk, no action. Or in Texas, as we say, it's all hat and no cattle. And we're tired of it. And it's not going to work anymore. And so I've endorsed his challenger, Don Huffines, Liberty guy, 100% conservative, and is not going to ask the federal government for permission to secure the Texas border. Yes, sir.
Quick one. My name is Tom Kelly, and you didn't say it, but are you actively preparing for Donald Trump's inauguration in 2025?
Well, he has to declare first. So we have a rule in Trump world, right? We have a rule. We never get in front of the president. It saves us every time.
There was one more question.
Yes, ma'am.
What's your best advice for getting parents to realize the indoctrination of their kids and getting
out? The best advice for parents who are not already aware of that is to leave them alone. Go build your coalition with people who are aware. Because one of the things that I've noticed is power is within numbers. Spending your time trying to convince people, like I said earlier, who can't hear you, is not beneficial of your time. And we have changed things at the local level with having 20 people show up somewhere. I'm sure you know 20 people that can show up somewhere. We had a congresswoman, actually a senator, fly back to our state when we had 400 people show up at her district office. We have to remind ourselves how to use the power that we have, and that power is numbers. So grow your coalition, and then take all those people and deploy them all at once. And then those other folks, we have to fight for them too, unfortunately. Yes, sir.
What can you tell us about the new Trump media situation?
Oh, yes. The Truth Social. So this is going to be a competitor to Twitter. There's also going to be a streaming service, and most likely a competitor to Fox News. They are planning television programming, commentary, that's going to let his voice be heard again. I mean, look, they're going to pull out all the stops to stop this man. But that's why we have to do our work on the ground to continue to support what he's doing for us. So instead of now telling Trump to go do it all, we need to now take accountability and do what we can here. You've seen governors like DeSantis, who've actually given his citizens recourse against big tech, allowing them to sue. If your governor's not doing that, time to get a new governor. Remember what I said. If you don't have a governor who is unequivocally loud and proud to defend your liberty, get a new governor. The issue is liberty, folks, I promise you. If we all come together for freedom, we will win. Thank you all for having me tonight.